pick up reports of stay away orders.
Let your mind shut the journey through a You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. On the dial, it's 103.1. And it's Monday, it's Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock, so it's time for another episode of Health and the Awakening of the Self. My name is Dr. Mike, and I'm an MD and a naturopath. And on this program, actually, I've changed the format of the program. From now on, the Tuesday program for 1 hour will be called Health and Wellness, because I'm going to separate the two subjects. Before, I mix them together, but now I want to try them separate, see how they go. So the program tonight is the first program called Health and Wellness, number one. And so in this program, we're going to try to give you practical information that can restore and preserve your health. So tonight's main dissertation is from Dr. Jason Fung, who basically formulates a new way, a new understanding, and a new way to treat diabetes. So if you have diabetes, this will be a program of direct interest to you, or you know somebody who has diabetes, you try to understand the talk and explain it to your friend. And they can actually go to YouTube and look up Dr. Jason Fung themselves. He's a doctor at the Scarborough Hospital in Ontario, Canada. But before I get to that point, I want to finish off a program. If you remember, yesterday I had Dr. Gidon on, and he was talking about the 10 foods that you shouldn't eat at all, ever. And if you remember, I just go if I could remember them myself. You remember the four grains that had gluten in them. And because they were so complex as a molecule, the villi in the small intestine couldn't really absorb them. So it was more a kind of a mechanical problem than it was any kind of sensitivity based on sensitivity. And that was wheat, barley, rye, and oats, particularly those four. There are, of course, grains that don't have gluten that would be okay. So he advises not to eat those grains. And also those grains break down into sugars, and the sugars go in our bloodstream. And we are today overburdened with carbohydrates. So it's a good thing to keep away, to cut down on carbohydrates. You can, if you wish, increase your natural fats, the good fats. I'll talk about those later. I've talked about them before on other programs, but they are actually avocados, olives. Better to use the olives, and if you absolutely need olive oil, best to squeeze the press the olives yourself at home. Make your own oil, because olive oil in a bottle, there's air in there too. We don't know how long it's been traveling from the source where they made it to your shelf in the kitchen. Could be weeks, could be months, maybe even years. And once you start pouring it, there's going to be air in there. That's oxygen. Oxygen oxidizes, and that's a big problem for the body. Best just to eat the olives or the olive oil. Of course, nuts and seeds are another good source for good fats. And then we have coconut oil. I hope I haven't left out any, but they're the main ones anyway. And so after we got through talking about the grains, he reminded us that deep fries are really, really bad. They're cancerous, and they have a substance that they create which is tremendously cancerous. Let's see if I can remember the substance. Um, That'll come to me later. Anyway, in the south of the United States, people die young. Statistics show that in Indian reservations, where they use a lot of fried foods, and in the southern states where everything is fried, people die at least 5 to 7 years younger on average. So stay away from the fries. So that's it. Can I remember what the other ones were? Probably not at the moment, but I'm going to finish that talk now, and there's some other things that he has added on, and we'll just go to those right now.
Now, the emphasis here is on well-done red meat and the skins of a baked potato, yam, or sweet potato. Has to be baked or fried, quite frankly. Well-done red meat and the crunchy skins of baked potatoes, baked yams, and baked sweet potatoes contain a nasty chemical called a heterocyclic amine.
Before we get to that...
Heterocyclic amines cause cancer.
We skipped a part, so I'm going to have to backtrack a little bit here, and hopefully we'll pick it up at the right spot.
I mean, for goodness sake. Technically, frying is cooking stuff in a superheated oil. We don't like oil for cooking. We hate it. Don't even want to look at it. But we're okay with butter or lard. Isn't that interesting? It's exactly the opposite of what you've been taught. And by the way, what you've been taught, how's that working for you? How's your health? You getting better every year? You getting healthier every year? Have you plateaued out and you're feeling good? Is that what's happening? Or are you getting worse? Autism has risen from 1 in 20,000, 1 in 10,000, to 1 in 80. Alzheimer's is now the sixth leading cause of death. It came out of nowhere. Heart disease rates unchanged. Cancer rates unchanged. Chronic disease on the rise. Life expectancy going down. Why? Because we've taken advice from the wrong people about what to do for health. Period. Your MD is the last person to go to for advice about health care. If you've got a bleeding artery or a broken bone or a nasty parasite, they're exactly the person you want to see. But if you want to optimize the structure and function of the human body, you need to visit a naturopath who has a clue. Gee, I wonder where you could find somebody like that. Now, if you don't follow this advice, if you use olive oil that's in a bottle, you're going to be pouring free radicals into the body, which are going to oxidize tissues in the body. It's only a matter of time before you die. But remember, before you die, you're going to suffer. You're going to lose all your money to the MDs with their ineffective, nonsense, ridiculous, archaic, dangerous treatments. And then you're going to die. I mean, death is inevitable. Suffering is optional. You tune your car up, you make sure it has all the right fluids, you wouldn't put diesel fuel in an unleaded engine, but you eat whatever you want and you drink whatever you want with feeling that you're Superman or Superwoman, and honestly, it's not your fault. It's your doctor's fault. Your doctor's the person that's supposed to be in charge of your health, but they have dropped the ball. Follow our advice, you stand a very good chance of living long and prospering. Next on the 10 bad food list, carbonated beverages. What? what's wrong with a carbonated beverage? Well, I'm so happy that you asked. Carbonated beverages, the bubbles in anything carbonated is carbon dioxide. What does carbon dioxide do? It neutralizes stomach acid. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? That's a bad idea. Your stomach acid wants to be acidic. When you neutralize the stomach acid, your stomach cannot digest the stuff that you just ate. Remember, it's your stomach's job to turn everything into a liquid mush, to chemically dissolve everything. Well, if the stomach acid had just been neutralized by carbon dioxide, it can't do that. So one of the worst things anybody can do is wash down a meal with anything that has bubbles in it. I don't care if it's club soda or Perrier, soda pop, ginger ale, beer, champagne, I don't care. If it's got bubbles in it, you should not drink it before or with a meal. If you do, you're just going to get empty calories, and you're going to accentuate nutrient deficiencies, malabsorption. This time the problem is that your stomach just couldn't chop the food up the way that it needed to. So even if the villi are intact in the intestinal tract, they can't absorb it because the stuff is too big for the villi to absorb. It passes through and you eliminate it. So washing down lunch with a Coke or anything that has bubbles in it is a fool's errand. And it will accelerate your nutrient deficiencies. Guaranteed. Well done, red meat and crunchy potato skins. Yum, yum. Well, sorry, not so much. Now, the emphasis here is on well done red meat and the skins of a baked potato, yam, or sweet potato. Has to be baked or fried, quite frankly. Well done red meat and the crunchy skins of baked potatoes, baked yams, and baked sweet potatoes contain a nasty chemical called a heterocyclic amine. Heterocyclic amines cause cancer. Now, meat is not the problem. The potato is not the problem. It's how it's cooked. You want to eat meat, have it rare or medium rare. You could have it raw, but for goodness sake, don't do that, because that's just gross. Rare or medium rare is the way to go. And if you want to have a potato, do like my Irish ancestors did, don't you know, and just boil it up. Boil it up, laddie. Tastes great. You can boil a potato. You can stew a potato. You can crock pot a potato, yam, or a sweet potato. When you do that, the skins are perfectly fine for you. But if you bake them, you're going to die. But first, you're going to suffer. Then you're going to go bankrupt. And then you're going to die. And it's the same for meat. It's not the meat. It's how it's cooked. And it's what's in the meat. Nitrates are added to meat as preservatives. When a nitrate is heated, it turns into a nasty chemical called a nitrosamine. And guess what a nitrosamine does? It causes cancer. It causes inflammation. It causes oxidative damage. The most common meats that have this crap in it are sausages, bacon, pepperoni, deli ham, and deli turkey. But fear not. Have no fear. The naturopath is here. You can have as much sausage, bacon, pepperoni, ham, and turkey as you want, as long as there's no nitrates in it. You got to be a smart shopper. You got to get knowledge. You have to empower yourself with the right stuff. You have to know what's going on so you don't die needlessly. I have bacon 3-4 times a week. My bacon doesn't have nitrates in it. I love turkey. It's one of my favorite meals. Thanksgiving dinner, are you kidding me? My turkey doesn't have nitrates in it. You can find these meats without nitrates. By the way, if there's a Whole Foods in your neighborhood, one of Whole Foods' things is all of the meat that they have is nitrate-free. So get a clue. and make a big difference in your life moving forward. This is the list, right? Wheat, barley, rye and oats, oil in a bottle, fried food, a carbonated drink with a meal. Don't look at them, let alone eat them. Stop eating them. Well done red meat, stop it. Bad dog, no biscuit. Meat with nitrates. And the skins of baked potatoes, yams, and sweet potatoes. Stop it. Don't do it. These things are hurting you slowly. You know, it's like that thing that they told every medical student is told this. If you get a pot of water, room temperature water, and you put a frog in it, and you slowly start to boil it, the frog will stay in the water until it boils to death because it gets used to the rising heat, habituates to it. But if you throw a frog in boiling water, it jumps right out. Well, guess what? You have habituated to feeling crappy because your entire life you've been eating these foods all of the time, which is why everybody is sick. You kidding me? The all-American meal. Well, let's look at what we've got. We've got a wheat bun. We've got a well-done hamburger. We've got American cheese, which is solidified oil. There's mayonnaise on that hamburger, which is solidified oil. There's French fries and a Coke. The breakfast of champions. The only thing good in that sandwich is the tomato and the lettuce and the ketchup. Tomato and the lettuce and the ketchup. That's it. And maybe the ice that's in the glass of Coke. But nobody knows this. I mean, you wouldn't feed your child arsenic. You wouldn't feed your child bugs. You wouldn't feed your child, you know, milk that had gone sour, but you're only too happy to give him French fries, you're only too happy to give him fried chicken, only too happy to let him have a Coke as long as it's a Diet Coke. It's nonsense. My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge. This is our gross, gross national product. Unbelievably bad health generated by a medical profession that is not concerned with what causes disease, a medical profession that does not practice health care, a medical profession that practices disease management in a profit-based system, exclusively using drugs and surgery to manage the problem, not to cure the problem. And we take advice on what to eat from the people who make the food. Everybody is sick. And this is half of the reason why. Now, we exist as a grassroots coalition of the informed through the agency of the Youngevity Corporation. Youngevity is an international, United States-based international nutritional supplement network marketing company, the intention of which is to grow a grassroots coalition of the informed. People who, like you, are sick and tired of being sick and tired. They don't know what to do. They know there must be a better way. And we in Youngevity bring to the marketplace information about science-based, clinically verified, holistic medical solutions, the intention of which are to support and promote your body's ability to fix itself. And that beats a poke in the eye with a sharp stick. Now, there are two ways you can work with Youngevity. You can work with Youngevity as a customer. You can work with Youngevity as a member. And if you join Youngevity as a member, we will show you how to make yourself wealthy while you're making your relatives and everybody in your community healthy. Every army needs to be paid. We're non-militant.
There is a kind of there are supplements particularly well put together behind this talk, so we can get into that at another time. I'm just trying to get out to you that certain foods are not worthy of eating. They have a damaging effect on your body. They increase the oxidation. Bad foods, fast foods have that effect too. But some of the foods you talked about, if there's any foods that we didn't get to, I'll fill you in the next program on health and wellness. So right now we're going to go back to some music again. Sarah Brightman is still in the picture here, so this time she's going to sing Wishing You Were Here, Somehow Here. Okay, that was Sarah Brightman, Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again. Beautiful singer, beautiful song. I just want to touch on a few things. Dr. Gideon was talking about how MDs are good at surgery, and I'll add to that they're also good at doing lots of different tests, you know, the laboratory. So those two things, they have legitimate knowledge. But when it comes to treating people through nutrition, they basically don't have much of a clue. There's the odd one here and there that reads magazines that picks up a little information. But in general, they don't have any appreciation for how food can improve your health. Even though the father that they recognize as the father of medicine, Hippocrates, wrote many years ago, hundreds of years ago, thousands, a few thousand, he wrote that let food be your medicine. I can't give you the exact quotation, but basically that's what he said. And my advice, I'm an MD, and I'm also a naturopath. I'm both. The Dr. Gideon is a naturopath, so I can give you the story from both sides of the fence, both sides of the coin. And naturopaths, yes, are recognize the healing force of the body, and they recognize if you give the body what it needs, it will, of its own, improve and get better. Most MDs do not have that understanding. Their education, when they are qualified as an MD, their education from that point onwards is totally supplied by the drug companies. They're invited out to lots of different meetings in the nicest hotels in town. They're invited out for dinner, sumptuous dinner. They're given free samples so they can get the patients on their drugs, and they used to get free trips to some exotic island for the I don't know if they're still getting that for the meetings. Sometimes they get free computers and stuff like that. But from time to time, you read about an outcry with this kind of bribery that goes on. So so if you just take one example, a diabetic from the onset of his diabetes to his death is worth to the medical profession $750,000. That's between all the different things, the tests they do, the amputations, the heart procedures, the eyesight, doctors and the stuff like that, with their laser surgery, et cetera, worth $750,000. However, diabetes, if you are willing to accept the responsibility yourself and not put it on the shoulders of other people who are more interested, sometimes it looks like, in the money aspect of things, and don't you yourself have your own best interest at heart. But you have to educate yourself, like knowledge is power, but knowledge and action is superpower. So, unfortunately, the education is not there basically for the people. The word doctor comes from Nesere, it's a Latin word, and it means teacher. But how many actual doctors teach the public? If you open the paper, do you get invited to a lecture on different conditions? Occasionally, but not that much. So the people are kept basically in ignorance, and they're not really informed. And in another way, in another side of the coin, is they don't have the impetus or the energy to find out about these things. YouTube is a good source nowadays for educating yourself in this regard. When I was back doing my internship in hospitals, what I found was the same person would come in to in the hospital with pneumonia, and they'd be treated for the pneumonia, and then a couple of weeks or even a couple of months later, they'd be back in the hospital, maybe at outpatients this time, with a different condition. They would still look as sick as they ever looked. Their symptom might be different, but they were sick in their consciousness. So that's one of the reasons that prompted me to also become a naturopath and learn deeper modalities for healing. We're going back now. I'm not going to play Jason Fong tonight because we don't have the actual time. I just looked at the clock, and we don't have the time to play the whole thing. So I'll wait until the next show. But we will go. These are little pockets. They come from the same doctor, Michael Gerber, Gregor, Michael Gregor, and he reads all the medical magazines from all over the world. He's very well informed in nutrition, and these are little clips. They're only 1 or 2 minutes long, most of them. So we'll start here. We'll start, and you'll learn some practical things from his little talks.
Hello, my name is Michael Gregor. I'm a physician, MD, a general practitioner in Boston, specializing in vegetarian nutrition, a topic I've been writing, speaking, researching about for about a decade now. In fact, I just took a year off to go travel around the country and speak on this topic, and the nice thing about that versus a video like this is I actually get to sit down and talk with people, answer questions, you know. That's usually the best part. So let me give you my contact information. My personal cell phone is 857-Nautics. Of course, there's still that jack-in-the-box E. coli 015787. You know, in summer 2002, ConAgra recalled 19 million pounds of beef in the United States, the second biggest beef recall in history. Now, my question is, where's the outrage? If 19 million pounds of beef distributed to half...
Oh, yeah, I think I started with the wrong one. That one actually is well over an hour. So I wanted the shorter one. So we're going to take a turn here into some of the other ones. Bear with me a little bit.
This was a pretty dramatic case report, but it was just one person. Recently, researchers at Harvard decided to look at 100,000 people, low-carb diets, and all-cause and cause-specific mortality. They found that low-carb diets were associated with higher all-cause mortality, higher cardiovascular disease mortality, and higher cancer mortality, the final nail in Atkins' coffin. Men and women on low-carb diets live significantly shorter lives, more cancer deaths, more heart attacks. Sure, you may lose some weight, but the only way we may be able to enjoy it is with a skinnier casket. But wait, in 2009, some enterprising researchers came up with a plant-based low-carb diet, the so-called Eco-Atkins diet. They figured that, you know, maybe the problem with the Atkins diet wasn't that it was high-fat, high-protein, but that it was high animal fat, animal protein. So they constructed like a vegan version of the Atkins diet. Now, how is that possible? Well, lots of mock meat, seitan, soy burgers, veggie bacon, veggie cold cuts, veggie sausage, tofu, lots of nuts, avocado, etc. How did they do? Pretty good, actually. Instead of their bad cholesterol going up, like it does on a meat-based Atkins, after just 2 weeks on the plant-based low-carb diet, their LDL was down more than 20%. Now, the whole study only lasted a month, though, so you couldn't really make any generalizations, but it was intriguing enough that when the data was run at Harvard, they picked out the people eating plant-based low-carb diets to see if they suffered the same low-carb fate. That's the nice thing about doing dietary studies on 100,000 people at a time. You can find people eating just about anything. What do you think they found? This line represents the mortality rate of the typical diet. And this is what they found for people following more of an Atkins-style low-carb diet, significantly higher risk of death. But what do you think they found for those following a plant-based low-carb diet? Did they suffer the same crazy mortality as the Atkins people? Or maybe they didn't do that bad, but still had more mortality than those eating regular diets? Or did they have the same or lower mortality? They had lower mortality.
Way lower.
They concluded, a low-carbohydrate diet based on animal sources was associated with higher all-cause mortality in both men and women, whereas a vegetable-based low-carbohydrate diet was associated with lower all-cause and cardiovascular disease mortality rates. So it appears what matters really isn't the ratio of fat to carbs to protein, but rather the source, whether they're coming from plants or animals. For example, 11 years ago, blueberries gained notoriety for their ability to improve
A point on that, that to consider is that there are 12 essential amino acids, and when meat or any kind of protein gets in the stomach, the acid breaks down the protein into individual amino acids. So you have about 12 individual amino acids. Now, the same amino acids that come from meat and the same are the same amino acids that come that from the other proteins that are not meat. So so it ends up that these individual amino acids goes into the small intestine and they get absorbed in the body. It's the very same amino acids that you get from the plant-based kingdom and the meat-based kingdom. And but with the plant-based diet, you don't get all the junk, the hormones, the antibiotics, and all the other stuff they inject into the meat to make it pretty, to make it, you know, sanitized, etc., etc. All right, just want to make that point. We'll now continue.
For example, 11 years ago, blueberries gained notoriety for their ability to improve memory among elderly rats. Now, it's always difficult to extrapolate between species, but I told people it might translate over and not just work in rats, but work for their pet hamsters, too. But we finally, this year, have human data, the first human trial to assess the potential benefit of blueberry supplementation on neurocognitive function. What do you think they found? Blueberries improve memory in humans. Is this fact or is this fiction? Let's look at the study. Blueberries improve memory in humans. Fact. And it turns out the healthful properties may survive processing into products like blueberry jam, but best to store it in the fridge even before it's opened. It's not what you eat, though, but what you absorb. Check out this study on long-term raw foodists. This study was done in Europe, so the average Western diet here wasn't terrible. 4 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, versus a better diet, 7 servings a day of fruits and veggies, both raw and cooked, versus a raw food diet, in which they ate, on average, a whopping 17 servings of fruits and veggies a day, leading them to have about 3 times the beta-carotene intake. But that's intake. How much of it actually got into their bloodstream? Blood beta-carotene is considered a good surrogate marker for a healthy diet. Tell me what your blood beta-carotene level is, and I'll tell you what your health risk is. So, who had the most beta-carotene in their bodies? Those eating 4 servings a day, 7, or 14? It was the middle group, the 7 servings a day group. because cooking can boost the absorption of phytonutrients like beta-carotene, like the cooked carrots having more antioxidants than raw. The raw food is here. We're eating 17 servings a day, and basically had the same amount of this phytonutrient reaching their internal organs as those on the crappy standard diet. So I recommend a combination of raw and cooked foods.
Yeah, the combination that I recommend is 60% raw, 40% cooked. Somewhere in that area would be pretty good. But it's interesting, the people who had the 7 servings of fruit and vegetable, and that's what the government are recommending right now. It used to be 5 servings, or maybe 3 to start with. Then it was 5, and now it's serving. It's 7. It could even have gone higher. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, 7 is a good number to keep in your mind, and raw and cooked. This is about
what's the healthiest way to prepare green tea? Recently in Taiwan, a new trend has arisen of cold steeping tea. Not like iced tea where you make it hot, then cool it down. But you start with cold water, throw the tea in, put it in the fridge for 2 hours, or just leave it at room temp. It's supposed to have less caffeine, reduce bitterness, and I'm sure it does, but cold water probably also doesn't draw out many of the antioxidants either. I mean, that's the whole point of brewing tea with hot water, right? To extract the nutrition. We shouldn't presume, though, and so scientists in Italy took it upon themselves to compare the antioxidant activity of cold versus hot steeped tea. Here's the data for hot tea. This is measuring the lag time before cholesterol oxidizes. You mix LDL, bad cholesterol, with an oxidizing agent like copper in this case, and it takes about 28 minutes to oxidize. But you add tea, and the oxidants slow down the oxidation and increase the lag time. That's a good thing. And as you can see, oolong tea is better than black, green is better than oolong, and white is the best overall. But this is the antioxidant activity for hot brewed tea. In a surprise upset, cold steeped tea was even better, significantly better. So much so that cold steeped black may even be healthier than hot brewed white. Why? Well, the only thing they could think of is that hot water is so hot that it destroys some of the catechins, the antioxidants in tea. So I no longer brew my tea. I just throw it in cold water. Saves time, saves energy, and we now know it's even healthier.
So there you go. Cold tea.
Black tea is also from the tea plant.
That's another one, process, comparing different teas.
But there are two types of green tea. That is, two types of unprocessed leaves of the tea plant. Tea from mature leaves, known as green tea, and tea from young leaves, known as white tea, because of the little white hairs on the immature leaves. Which is healthier? It turns out, it depends on whether you add lemon or not. If you drink your tea without lemon, green appears preferable to white. But if you add lemon, the white tea jumps ahead. It turns out, while there may be more phytonutrients in the white tea, they may only be released at the right pH. Regardless of which tea you drink, though, adding lemon boosts the nutrition.
Okay, add lemon to your tea. It boosts nutrition.
Now, to significantly extend our lifespan, the latest research suggests one would have to drink 7 cups of tea a day, which raises the question, how much is too much? Sometimes you can get too much of a good thing, even water. Last year, for example, a jury awarded $16 million to a family whose mom died of water intoxication trying to win her family a Nintendo. Some radio jocks came up with the idea for a Hold Your Wee for a Wee contest. Whoever could drink the most water wins. Jennifer came in second, before she keeled over dead. So you can overdo anything. how much tea is too much? Is the safe upper limit around 5 cups a day, 10 cups, 15, 20, or can one safely drink 25 cups of tea a day? The limiting factor is probably the fluoride levels in tea. There was a case recently reported of a woman developing fluoride toxicity from tea. How much did she drink? 1 to 2 gallons of double-strength tea every day of her adult life. That's the equivalent of about 30 to 60 cups of regular tea a day. That's definitely too much. Based on a new analysis of fluoride levels in 5 brands of bottled tea, I would recommend people not drink more than 10 cups of tea a day. Folic acid supplements, which are recommended for all women of childbearing age to prevent birth defects. Harmful, harmless, or helpful? In other words, vitamin and panacea or genetic time bomb. I do not recommend folic acid supplements. I recommend folate, from the same word root as foliage, found in dark green leafy vegetables and legumes. But everybody knows no one eats greens and beans every day, so the government started fortifying our food supply with folic acid in 1998. Folic acid, though, is not the same thing as folate, but it's cheaper and more stable in pill form, and so that's why they use it instead. In fact, folic acid is a synthetic chemical not found in nature at all, but studies on rats found that there's an enzyme in the liver that basically changes it into the natural form. Studies keep coming out, though, linking folic acid supplementation with diseases like breast cancer and colon cancer, so yes, it lowers the risk of birth defects, but may raise our risk of cancer. But wait a second, spinach and doesn't raise our risk of cancer. Beans and greens lower the risk of both birth defects and cancer. It was a big mystery until last year, when scientists figured out we're not rats. It's hard to study human livers because people tend to need them, but sometimes an organ donor dies and there's no one to take the liver, and so scientists were finally able to see what happens in rat livers actually happens in human livers. And it turns out that the enzyme that converts folic acid in pills into something our body can actually use is 50 times less active than in rats, less than 2% of the activity we thought it had, based on the animal studies. So because our enzyme is extremely slow, people who take folic acid pills have lots of this synthetic folic acid circulating in their bodies, and that's what we think may be behind the elevated cancer risk, whereas beans and greens every day offer the best of both worlds. Two years ago, I presented a mystery. Long-term adherence to a diet that includes meat even just once a week or more was associated with a 74% increase in the odds of getting diabetes relative to long-term adherence to a zero-meat diet. Just a single serving of any type of meat or more a week was associated with dramatically increased risk. This makes sense, though. Eating vegetarian helps lose weight. Losing weight helps you avoid diabetes. So what's the mystery? Even after controlling for weight change, weekly meat intake remained an important factor for diabetes. So even at the exact same weight, eating meat weekly significantly increases our risk of diabetes. So there must be a more direct factor, and this year we got closer to an answer. Your body's smart. It knows that high levels of circulating steroid sex hormones in the bloodstream can be deleterious, increasing our risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer, other disorders like diabetes. So our bodies produce a sex hormone binding globulin, a protein your body makes that takes excess hormones out of circulation. The more hormone binding proteins we have, the lower our risk of these diseases. That's where a plant-based diet comes in. Sex hormone binding levels were significantly higher by more than half in vegetarian women compared to omnivore women, and higher concentrations have been shown to be associated with a favorable metabolic profile, as well as reducing the risk of type 2 diabetes. So this may explain why even when vegetarians are overweight, they don't suffer the same rate of diabetes that meat eaters do. In Volume 3,
we've basically come to the end of the show this evening, and just two points to keep in mind. When I was talking about how doctors don't know much about nutrition, one point I'd like to make is that the statins drugs, they act by blocking, by poisoning the production of steroids in the liver. And the same pathway actually blocks an enzyme called the blocks the body making an enzyme that's essential for every cell in the body called coenzyme Q10. And particularly the heart needs this enzyme for strength, for the contraction, for the muscles in the heart. And there was one company in the past who, when they sold their statins, they also sold CQ10 with the statin. And there's, I saw one advertised just recently on the television, some other company doing the same thing. But for most of the case, all the doctors, this I'm talking now for the last 20 years or whatever, none of the doctors knew about this. This was kind of kept secret, you could say. And, and so basically when you take these statins, You get this enzyme blocked, and no doctor would ever say tell the patients you need to go and buy coenzyme Q10 and take it with the statins. So that's just one example of of how this nutritional world works in the medical profession. It's possible the reason for that is that you can't really, make patent CQ10. It's a natural enzyme, and you can't really patent it. So that's, if they could see making money behind it, I'm sure they would have tried. All right, before we leave all this, I want to remind you that the body needs 91 nutrients to function properly. These include 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 essential fatty acids, and 60 minerals. The minerals are not in the soil. The soils are depleted over the years, and so we're not really getting all. Some of them are only needed as trace minerals, but nevertheless they are needed, and we're not getting all these minerals. So that's one of the reasons why our bodies, our health is weak today. I hope you learned something useful. It was nice to be with you for this hour, and we'll be back again this day week on Tuesday at 7 to 8 p.m. All right, I'll sign out here with some music. Again, it's Michael Crawford and Sarah Brightman, Music of the Night.
Stirs imagination, silently the senses abandon their defenses, helpless to resist the notes I write, for I compose the music of the night. Slow, splendor, grasp it, sense it, tremulous and tender. Hearing is believing, music is deceiving, hard as lightning. candlelight. Dare you trust the music of the night? Close your eyes, for your eyes will only tell the truth, and the truth isn't what you want to see.
The music of the night.